www.thebigradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vafidez.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of PWP Radio. This is episode number 5. I can't believe we're 5 episodes in, Will. This is great news. And I just want to tell everybody out there who's listening to please check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. We're constantly updating that page with pictures, videos, different discussions. We also have a group on Facebook that you can find. And we're trying to get everybody involved. We're trying to get the social media aspect of it really going strong. And it's also important that you go to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com where you can get all of your latest wrestling headlines and many more great articles and different information about the wrestling business throughout its history, not just what's going on right now. So I'm going to give it over to my co-host. Here is none other than the man with the master plan, Mr. Will TLD Vafidez. What's up, Will?
I'm officially putting that on my next T-shirt at tldwrestling.com. I am definitely going to be doing that. Thank you, that. I will take that from you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Happy to be here. And not only that, but we also, remember, have the iTunes page. We need people to comment. We need people to rate it. We need people to subscribe to it. Not only that, but also going to tldwrestling.com, which is the second most important website other than prowrestlingpowerhouse.com, of course.
Absolutely. Visit TLDWrestling.com. And it is important, Will, that you rate us and listen to us on iTunes. We need to get those iTunes subscribers up. It's very easy. Most people use Apple, have an iPod, whatever. So please check us out on
iTunes.
That's the
best product on earth.
There you go, putting over your company. But let's get into it, Will. Breaking news today. Unless you live outside the wrestling bubble, which you probably don't since you're listening to this show, John Cena underwent a procedure today, a surgery, to remove bone chips out of his elbow. Now, John Cena is one of the toughest guys to ever walk in a wrestling ring. He's shown it time and time again. Every time he goes out there, he gives 100%, and he is hurt right now. He'll be out. They said it was 4 to 6 weeks, but now reports are saying 2 to 3 weeks, John Cena will be off, maybe not off TV, but outside the wrestling ring in a physical capacity. Will, what do you think this means for the build-up towards the next big pay-per-view, which is a while away, it's towards the end of October, and the future of this angle with CM Punk?
I think I wouldn't be surprised if they bring this up on television about that. It sucks. It's the right time to do it because right now keeping CM Punk and, John Cena apart couldn't be, it make us pay for that fight. That's what I like about wrestling is that you don't need wrestling to really make a storyline look good. You just need some good talking and some good, good writing, good promoting, and you can get this to look good. These two should never fight each other unless they are at a pay-per-view, and that's what I think builds it up great, and they can do that now with Cena being out. I think it will still be at the shows, but, CM Punk's going to have a lot of heel time now with Cena being gone, so I think that's a good thing for him, just to build up more hate and more heat. And he's been doing such a great job, especially the last 2 days of wrestling.
It's a good opportunity to maybe get somebody else involved in this angle. They could even play it off that John Cena got hurt at some point during the match on Raw or even at the pay-per-view. They could show a clip of CM Punk putting him in the Anaconda Vice and use that as a way to get the injury angle over. John Cena's the type of guy that will do anything for WWE. Or they could even have him come out in a swing on Raw and have Punk maybe attack the injury and even get the heat built up even more because this feud has gone full circle over the last year and hopefully it can end the right way at Hell in a Cell because that pay-per-view relies on what takes place during this feud. That's going to be the culmination of it. That's going to be a huge match. It could be the biggest Hell in a Cell matches we've had in years and I just hope Cena can recover. We know he will. He's a beast out there. So he'll recover quick, and he'll be back out there. But how about this, Will? Night of Champions was Sunday night, and we went over it last week on the show. We gave our predictions. All of us were a little bit off, but some of us were dead on what was going to happen. So let's go through the card and give our insight on what took place on each and every match We'll be quick. We'll be concise. But here's the first match of the card, Will. And I know he's one of your favorite wrestlers out there. The Miz defeats Rey Mysterio, Sin Cara, and Cody Rhodes in a great opener to Night of Champions. What's your thoughts on The Miz retaining the Intercontinental Championship?
Very happy that The Miz retained the title. And honestly, what other way could you go? I mean, you weren't going to put on Mysterio. You weren't going to put on Sin Cara. They got the tag team division going right now. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if Rhodes or Miz kind of went against each other, but clearly we now know the direction on Raw. But I thought it was a great opener. It was a great match. I like the mask scenario where they blinded The Miz and he took out Rhodes, maybe by accident. He didn't know who he took out. But, man, yeah, he survived three other guys. You know, one's a former world champion. One's a great Intercontinental champion, or used to be. And then you have an upcoming Sin Cara. I think it was good for him. I think it was a great Intercontinental opener.
It was an absolutely great win for The Miz. The spot with the mask was awesome. I thought that was very creative, very well done. And these four showed that they can really put on a solid, fast-paced, great opening contest. It was a fun match. It was a great way to open the show. And speaking of a fun match, the next match we had was Kane and Daniel Bryan. They went into this, team friendship. They went into this match with Kofi Kingston and R-Truth, and it was for the WWE Tag Team Championships. And Kane and Daniel Bryan became Team Friendship, the Tag Team Champions of the world. Will, what were your thoughts on this? There was a lot of shenanigans in this match.
Oh, it was great. It was great to watch. You know, a couple people I watched it with does not fond of the Daniel Bryan and Kane thing. I don't understand why, but they aren't. But I'm totally intrigued by it, and I love it. And honestly, how else could you go? It had to be them winning it. You know, I mean, if someone is not into the storyline, you got to tell me why and give me a very convincing reason, because we're putting some focus on the tag team division now, even though it's a team that doesn't get along, but those are some of the teams that you actually really enjoy. You know, those teams that just don't look right together, don't feel right together, but you just like to watch them. And that's what this team does. And the fact that Kane went to Disneyland afterwards with the Gatorade spot and backstage, and I love the fact that using that I'm the tag team champions, but they're pluralizing it for themselves. I think that's such a great small aspect that just catches on. I think it's great. I think it's great they won.
I agree with you. This angle might be the best angle going right now, especially in the mid-card.
It's not even an angle. I mean, it's really just a tag team that just doesn't get along. It went from an angle into a tag team. So,
well, it's a part of the big angle. It's a part of this big angle, and I really think it's going to come full circle eventually. There's going to be an ending, and I could see this whole entire storyline ending with Daniel Bryan becoming a gigantic babyface and Kane becoming a demonic monster. He's going to snap. I think eventually Team Friendship's going to break up, and it's going to be because Kane is going to snap and torture Daniel Bryan, but I think that should be down the road. They should milk this for all it's worth because it's fucking entertaining. It's one of the things I look forward to every time I watch WWE, man. I love Daniel Bryan. I've made it known in many different media outlets that he's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And he's showing that he can do absolutely anything out there. You put him out there with fucking Moppy, Saturn's Mop, or like Katie Vick's dead body or something, and he'll give you a five-star match out there. And that's the best thing about Daniel Bryan, is he can do anything. He's versatile, and he's showing off right now in this big storyline that just seems like it's not going to end anytime soon. And that is absolutely awesome. The next thing we have going on this card is, you know, Zack Ryder seems to be the king of the Battle Royal. This is his second huge Battle Royal victory of the year. If you remember a couple months ago on SmackDown, he became the guest GM by winning a Battle Royal. So Zack Ryder went into this Battle Royal, eliminated Lord Tensei, or just Tensei, or Albert, whatever the hell you want to call him, at the end to get a United States title shot at Antonio Cesaro with that smoking hot Oksana by his side. So Will, Cesaro defeated Zack Ryder on this match, and we got to see that brutal European uppercut. That's awesome. That should be his finish. But what do you think about Cesaro retaining the United States title?
Well, first off, it's Tensei, if you're going to own a wrestling website, Jay, you have to learn all the wrestling names and say them correctly. It's Tensai, okay? I'll go. We'll talk. We'll get together, and I'll help you out with the verbiage, okay?
I really need that. Will, I really need help with that. Thank you.
This is why I'm here, to help you, to help you learn about wrestling. So, back to Mr. Long Island IZ. He actually won a couple Battle Royals. I was listening to his G-Tro Long Island story, and he brought up a point where he's won, like, tons of Battle Royals. He's won, like, 4. You know, I'm like, wow, he's won actually a lot of Battle Royals. If you really look back in his history, I mean, look up the history of Zack Ryder's Battle Royal wins. This goes back when he was an Edgehead and he won. That's how old he's been winning Battle Royals. But it's good. I was glad that he won. It was pretty obvious he was going to win. It was either him or Brodus Clay, and Ryder's over with the crowd. But you knew he wasn't going to win, you know, because that's the way Ryder's been kind of built up today, which is terrible for him, but it's the way it is. But Antonio Cesaro, that uppercut looked deadly, man. It was either Zach took it real well or, you know, Cesaro just, you know, it was just an incredible showing of Cesaro, because you don't get to see him on Raw enough, especially if you don't watch SmackDown enough. You don't get to see Cesaro too much, and it shows his real athletic ability, and it was good. I really enjoyed it. It wasn't, people weren't into it, which, you know, sometimes you need the crowd to be really into that show, and sometimes when the crowd's not into it, you just don't get into it either. So I think that's what kind of hurt a little bit about it.
Well, you know, the thing I noticed about Zack Ryder, I haven't been a huge fan of him, a big supporter, but I was watching that match pretty closely, and he's pretty damn good. I mean, his timing seemed good. His gimmick is getting a little bit stale, but all in all, he put on a hell of a match to Antonio Cesaro in the short amount of time they had to really get it going, and Cesaro defeated him, and it was a good match for both guys. I think Zack Ryder getting back on pay-per-view and having a big match like that really helps his cause, and he seems to be on Raw just about every week, although he's kind of fading into jobber territory. It really doesn't matter, because he's the type of guy that's going to continually... Yeah, but he's going to continually get himself over. There's no doubt about that.
Well, here's the problem with Zack Ryder, and when we were all chanting for him to get the United States title and he finally got it and he got killed off with the angle with Kane, it really hurt him, because this guy came from being a nobody to being a somebody by social media, and he finally made it, but then when the fans are finally getting behind him like nuts, like we were at the Garden, it faded away, because I don't know if it's that Ryder has a weakness now where the gimmick is kind of stale, or if it's just the fact that he finally got to where he got to and he lost the belt so quickly that, well, I guess he's not going to be a main event player. So I guess we have to go on to the next guy, like a Ryback. It's just something about Ryder. He lost a lot of steam. Like, if I guarantee if he went back to the Garden again and we're at the state where he's at right now, he's just not going to get the same reaction. So it's just that's just the way it is right now until something can spark him or something changes about him.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say this. Last thought about Zack Ryder is I actually think that WWE punished him for coming up with this whole thing on his own. You know, it's almost like they took all his ideas and they've been incorporating it in all, like, with this tout. Like, tout is essentially what Zack Ryder did with the True Long Island story when he first started it. And this is something that WWE incorporates on a weekly basis. So they pretty much took his idea and they used it for themselves. And from what I hear, he's not getting shit out of it, especially not a push. And that's sad.
Well,
he definitely deserved it. He definitely worked hard for it.
Well, I think he's going to have a spot in the company forever. I think that WWE kind of owes it to Ryder that, you know, hey, he did these shows. He did the tout, he did the Twitter, he did all these different things. And, yeah, he does deserve a lot of credit for WWE kind of realizing, hey, this is actually working, when they were really against it. And now they're all for it and put a lot of money and investment into these social media sites. They own, what, like 30 or 40% of tout? You know, if that takes off, that's good money for them. You know, so, you know, hopefully, I don't think Ryder's going to be left on the side, but, yeah, it does hurt now that they got so much social media going on that you kind of forget about Ryder now, because a year ago we weren't talking about YouTube shows and, you know, we were just talking about one show, and that was Zack Ryder's. But now there's so much other content out there, you kind of forget about Ryder's stuff now.
Exactly, and another thing that's out there, we had him last week, Red Titus, who just started Titus TV. It's different, but
right.
It's the same premise as the Zack Ryder show. But it's smart. It's smart for Red to do that. And moving on from Zack Ryder, we'll talk a little bit more about him later when we talk about Monday Night Raw. Moving on from him, we had Randy Orton defeating Dolph Ziggler again on the big stage at the pay-per-view. It was kind of your standard match between these two. They fought countless times. What do you think about this result, Will?
How good is Ziggler?
He's damn good.
Yes. He's really that good. You know, I really enjoy Ziggler's work. I really enjoy Orton's work. Orton kind of got a little pissed in the crowd there, kind of gave a little finger to somebody in the crowd there. I don't know if you caught that. I mean, obviously people knew about it now afterwards, but I caught that during the show. I don't know if you caught that or not.
I didn't catch it live, but I saw the memes and whatnot about it afterwards, and that's, you know,
well,
I saw the Randy Orton. Randy Orton's on thin ice as it is, man. It seems like he just doesn't give a fuck right now.
He's trying to turn heel. You can tell by doing a little antic like that, you know, flipping off somebody in the crowd for whatever reason. But don't you think he looks like he's trying to be a heel? You know, I mean, I know he wants it. He's talked about it. He wants it, you know. But, yeah, he's on thin ice. One more stuff and he's out, you know. I mean, he shouldn't be pushing his buttons either. I mean, that's another thing you don't want to do either.
No,
I don't care if you
not.
Have a last name Orton. I really don't care if you have a last name Orton. Don't take advantage of what you got, you know, because he's a big star in the company and they could really use him, you know, on SmackDown. But, man, you know, he's still a great wrestler. He's still a great talent. And that was a crisp match. You know, if it wasn't for the main event, that probably would have been a match of the night.
Yeah, it was. Timing was really good. The finish was awesome. I mean, Randy Orton pulled that RK off, but I give all the credit to Ziggler on that. And those spots outside the ring with the DDT off the rail and everything, it's been known on the internet and there are rumors going around that Ziggler comes up with all of these crazy spots on his own. And that's a testament to him because he's not only coming up with spots for his matches, but for other ones too. And when he's working hard like that, eventually a reward comes and, you know, eventually he will be World Heavyweight Champion again. So it was a good match, a testament to both guys. And moving on from that, we had Eve defeating Layla to become the new Divas Champion. And we saw this coming last week. I mean, we didn't think it would happen at the pay-per-view. We actually thought Caitlin would compete, but this was the way the angle was going. What are your thoughts on Eve and the angle with the injury with Caitlin? It was kind of like a Nancy Kerrigan thing. I'm showing my age, but Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding from back in the early 90s. What do you think about this angle, Will?
You know, I mean, they obviously planned. It was pretty tough. I mean, Caitlin's just not somebody that, you know, didn't catch a fire yet. And they just put Eve in the place of it. You know, I don't know if that was the plan all along or not, but I don't know what they're – I mean, they're trying to build a long-term plan with Eve and Layla, and Eve's acting like the face right now. You know, it was I just wasn't getting into it because once Eve was in the match, I kind of figured she was going to win.
Yeah, I
but the right person
that.
Has the belt. Right now, the right person has the belt because Layla really did not prove herself when she came in as a surprise entrant back up at the Backlash pay-per-view or Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And it just came out of nowhere. They really didn't do anything with it. So, you know, they got to build that up. They got to start building up those two and, figure out what to do and what to go on from there because they're talented women. They just need to have a storyline to back it up.
Well, we know that WWE loves mainstream attention. When Kelly was was on the Maximum cover, they gave her the belt and pushed her as the face of the Divas division. And now Eve won the Stars and Strikes reality show on NBC, and she's getting that attention now from WWE. They put her on SmackDown. She's a great part of the show with Booker T, and she is now the Divas champion, and she deserves to be the Divas champion. She was really good when she had it previously, and she'll be good this time as well. Moving on from that, we got our two championship matches. The first one was probably its highest billing in a long time. It went on as pretty much the co-main event. Sheamus once again defeats Alberto Del Rio, but I think the big topic on this is the fact that Booker T reinstated the bro kick right before the match started. I don't know about you, Will, but they worked really hard and spent a lot of time putting over the Texas Cloverleaf as a finisher for Sheamus, and then all of a sudden you bring the bro kick back right before the pay-per-view. It seemed like a way to screw Del Rio over once again, but I thought it was stupid and a waste of time. What do you think about that, Will?
Yeah, that was the first thing I noticed, that when Booker T did, when they did that, it took away from the idea of making the match different from other, you know, matches that they had. Okay, so he can't use his, you know, he can't use his main move, you know? So now they're giving him, you know, he has to use that cloverleaf now to win. But yet, you know, it wasn't right. I don't understand why they had to do that. I just don't know what the purpose was for that. So I was pretty upset the way that went. And it wasn't right to do it. Although the match was good, and there's no doubt about it, the match was good, but it lost its feel when that happened. I think people were kind of like, you know, because they wanted to see what would happen with Sheamus, that he couldn't use that move in his title match. So, you know, so it is what it is. I like the match, but I think it took a lot away when they made that announcement.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, you know, like I said before, the Texas Cloverleaf was built up. They should have incorporated that in a huge way in the match, but instead, the bro kick was reinstated. And even if they would have had Del Rio somehow win the match, if Sheamus used it illegally, something, they should have done something different. And I really didn't like how they did this. It was just another way to keep Sheamus strong. But, you know, I don't want to get into my Sheamus Del Rio hate, because they can go on for hours. And
we know how you feel.
Yeah, we only have another 37 minutes left, and I just want to tell everybody, if you'd like to call in and discuss Night of Champions, please do. The phone number is 760-888-5749. Before we get to John Cena CM Punk, that phone number once again is 760-888-5749. And I'd just like to remind everybody that tonight we're only doing an hour show, but we will go into overtime. So please, if you get cut off listening after the hour mark, go to iTunes tomorrow, go to blogtalkradio.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse and listen to the rest of the show. It won't disappoint. We're going to have guests on tonight, and we're going to keep it going strong all night long. And speaking of going strong, this feud has been fucking strong. And I'm talking about CM Punk and John Cena. They had a draw at Night of Champions in an absolutely outstanding match. Might have been the best match they've ever had, if you ask me. A lot of false finishes. Cena worked the match hurt. But you couldn't even tell. I mean, he sprained his ankle pretty severely, but when you got that shoe on tight, you don't really feel until you take the shoe off later. And Cena just went full force. I was extremely happy with his performance. And the draw, it was a great finish to the match. Everyone likes to see a winner. But, Will, it was a draw. What are your thoughts on this big draw that took place at Night of Champions?
It was a very good match. You know, I mean, I almost say it was, if it wasn't for the storyline, I think it was a better wrestling match than their Money in the Bank match. And the reason, not the storyline going into it, just the way the match was. And, you know, we're in Cena's hometown. You know, he's got this new cancer thing. You know, they're trying to push, which, by the way, is a good cause. You know, there's nothing wrong with it.
You know what I would have loved? Well, I would have booked it this way. I would have booked it this way. Let me just tell you real quick. I would have gone with the same finish, but I would have used the 5 more minutes tactic, where Cena asks for 5 more minutes, and maybe AJ comes out and grants it to screw over Punk. So you got 5 minutes, you have a time limit. And this goes back to something like, you know, Ric Flair used to do all the time. Cena could have, you know, CM Punk trapped while the time's ticking down in the SDF, and the time runs out, and there's no winner, it's still a draw. But at least that drama is built up. And Paul Heyman could be freaking out. You know, I thought it would have made a lot of sense and would have added to the drama of the match. And CM Punk could have still talked about his disrespecting and all that stuff. But either way, it was a draw. It built towards Hell in a Cell, which the tentative main event is still Cena versus Punk, although Cena had surgery, which we talked about. He'll still be in there, and they'll still be ready to go for that pay-per-view. So that's Night of Champions, folks. Any final words on Night of Champions, Will?
if you had to give it a 1 to 10 rating, what would you give it?
I'd give it a solid 8. I mean, I can't give it a 9 or a 10 because some of the matches, although they were all pretty good, some of them just weren't as strong as they should have been. Some of the booking was kind of rushed a little bit. But I'd give it a solid 8. The wrestling was solid up and down. What do you think?
You know, the one thing about the show that, you know, I just felt like it wasn't up to par to what it was. I mean, the main event's what I really wanted to watch. You know, I gave it about a 6 to 7. You know, I didn't think it was super great, you know, but I think it kind of felt like there wasn't anything special that happened other than the tag match. I would say, the only couple matches I really cared about was the tag match and the world title match. Other than that, the other matches were kind of like not important. I don't think they made a significant change in storylines going forward. You know, only those two matches really did. You know, so that's the problem with that show. I think that for just the tag titles and for the world title were the only things that were significant, you know, coming out of it. Other than that, it wasn't that, like, blown-away pay-per-view that I expected.
Yeah, the wrestling was solid, like I said, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was smooth. Everything seemed to go well. And, you know, once again, WWE delivered on pay-per-view. And on the WWE note, we're going to stick with WWE. Right now we have a caller, which I'd like to take. And we're looking at, excuse me for a second, we're looking at the 661 area code. 661, you're on the air with PWP Radio here in the Powerhouse. What's your name and where you're from?
Hey, guys. This is the Shark, Sean Williams, calling in from Southern Cal, calling in from Santa Clarita.
Hey, Sean, how you doing tonight, man? I know you got a show coming on after this show tonight on Blog Talk Radio. And what are your thoughts? What do you got to say to the audience tonight?
Oh, yeah, I got my own. I got my show prepping up tonight. Getting ready to drop about 3 pipe bombs and try to redefine that term. I don't know. My problem with Night of Champions, if it suffered from anything, and I was saying this in the realm and that on Facebook, that if it suffered from anything, it suffered from the fact that it was predictable in some areas. I mean, one disappointment for me, given the Divas division is kind of encircling the drain for months, I was wanting to see Caitlin walk out with that belt, and that we got Eve Manjaw Torres, and yeah, I'm saying she's got a jaw like a man.
Oops.
But
harsh,
I'm saying that,
harsh.
Yeah, I'm just saying that to see her walk out with the belt and then to see Beth Phoenix, of all people, who we all know is the better wrestler, job to Eve Torres, that's just wrong. And
what's
as
wrong
far
about
as,
it?
Well, come on, we all know Beth is a better wrestler and she has to, and yet she's been reduced to a jobber, to somebody who can barely wrestle to save her own life.
Because no one connects with Beth Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, that's
how many
the problem is. She's done everything.
True.
That's the problem.
Well, she also does
wrestling ability. At least Eve does have wrestling ability. And for someone like Kelly, I can understand why people didn't like her because of her wrestling. But at least Eve does have that MMA background, does have that karate background, you know, and she's a damn beautiful woman. You know, I don't know. I totally love Eve having the belt more than Beth. Even though I like Beth, but Eve is so much better to have as a champion, especially when she's in this heel character.
She's more marketable. I'll give you that. She's more marketable. And, you know, you said that Beth Phoenix has done it all, including CM Punk and Edge currently, from what I understand. So she got kind of stale after a while. She can only hold that belt so long, so many times, and Eve actually has a storyline, and Sean, correct me if I'm wrong.
We'd have something.
No, you're right, but how long has it been since Beth Phoenix has been on Raw, Sean? It's been a while, right?
Yeah, well, you could say that about just about all the divas. I mean, these days, we're lucky if we get them on.
Well,
I mean, if it weren't for the three-hour Raw, then they probably wouldn't put them on.
Oh, that's a great point, and thanks for your call, Sean. Make sure you check out Sean's show, The Shark Attack, coming on after this, after Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for your call, Sean. Appreciate it.
Hey. Yeah, no problem, guys.
Yeah, he's got three pipe bombs tonight.
He's got some pipe bombs for you, but right now, speaking of Monday Night Raw, we're starting to talk about Raw a little prematurely, but I'd like to bring in a writer for PWP, a writer for ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. He's out of Brooklyn, New York. His name is John D. He's been on the show before, and he's back to talk Monday Night Raw with us. John, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Good, Jay. What's going on, man?
Nothing. We're talking. We're rolling along here talking about Night of Champions, but now we're moving directly into Monday Night Raw, which had a lot of matches on it, man. This is a 9-match card, and with the 3 hours, that's what WWE needs to do. They need to utilize all this time for wrestling and not bullshit. We had a little bit of bullshit on the show, but it wasn't a big deal. A lot of wrestling action, and that was great news. So I'm going to kick it off with the opening segment between Paul Heyman. You had referee Chad Patton. You had Alberto Del Rio, John Cena, AJ Lee. What do you think? I'm going to shoot you, John, since you just came on the show. What were your thoughts on the opening segment of Monday Night Raw?
The opening segment itself was, I thought, was really well done with Heyman coming out. And, you know, I originally thought when they brought out Patton, I mean, Heyman's just phenomenal on the mic. And, you know, him with Punk, it's pure gold. So that goes without saying. I don't have to really delve too much into that. But what I liked what they did, and they did it better than what they did the night after SummerSlam, was they had Heyman bring Patton out, and they had Patton actually justify and explain his decision in a way that it was like, all right, you know what? Yeah, the draw, quote-unquote, sucked, but you know what? You could actually see where Cena actually didn't get totally screwed. Cena coming out, doing the shtick, I understand, I get it, but I wanted 5 more minutes. It wasn't over the top, which is what I would have expected from Cena. The AJ thing was, it was a welcome change, because normally how many times in the past would the main event for Hell in a Cell been announced in that segment right there? You know, we're going to have a winner, one fall to a finish, Hell in a Cell, Cena, Punk. I like the fact that they incorporated Del Rio, and AJ basically said, you guys are going to have to, you know, be in this tag tonight, and, you know, maybe if one of you guys can get a win, maybe that will help your guys' case. You know, so it was well done. It was a fresh segment, a little Heyman and Cena. They actually worked very well off each other, and I thought it was a great way to start the show, and I really loved the incorporation of Patton. That's something that really stuck out to me in that segment.
Well, it's the second time that Paul Heyman's called a referee out to the ring, which I don't know if that's going to be something they continue with or not, but the second time in about a month that a referee's been involved in an angle with Paul Heyman. So, Will, your thoughts on the opening segment of Monday Night Raw?
I like how Alberto Del Rio got involved, because it brought him into like the main event storyline of the entire show. You know, I did like the referee coming out defending his decision, and John Cena coming out. You know, it was a good start to show. I just don't understand what AJ means by like, hey, the winner gets like may have a shot but may not, or might impress me. It's like it's John Cena. It's like the main top four guys. You know, why would you even want to? The only thing that was so confusing about that was like, you know, if you win, you know, I might give you a shot, or it might be a potential of getting a shot. It's John Cena and, you know, Alberto Del Rio, the challengers. Who else are you going to give the shot to?
Not to cut you off, but how many times have we seen segments where it would have been announced right then and there that those were going to be the two automatic rematches for Hell in a Cell? At least now you got a little more creative twist to, I mean, where it's inevitably going to go.
It's already going to go there, so why even bring it up? Just let them have the two main, just say, I'm going to have the two main events fight tonight, and that's my main event show. And that's it. You don't have to bring up the potential of it, because they're going to get the shot anyway.
Here's why I don't kill it. Here's a perfect example of why I don't kill it. Vengeance 07, Cena Orton were feuding off the world, I think it was the world title, the WWE title, whatever. They weren't the main event. Taker was, but that's not the point of it. The point of it was that Cena got the cue in that match with Orton, and that match wasn't even over for 5 minutes, and JBL on commentary announced that they were going to do Last Man Standing at No Mercy. So it's like, to me, it was just nice to see that, you know what, at least they're going to make it. I mean, you can remember, you got 6 weeks, too, in between this and Hell in a Cell, so why not tease it and tweak it for a couple of weeks, you know, even before, you know, what was going on with Cena's elbow today.
Well, guys, I got to say, I kind of agree with both of you on this, Kate. I thought the start to the show was entertaining, but they left you with that gray area. You know, AJ's been so unpredictable, and her character, at least, and you just never know what she's going to do. So with the finish, the foot on the rope, it just adds to CM Punk's storyline, and it all revolves around Punk. It revolves around him more than Cena, Del Rio, or anybody else involved in the contest. So it all revolves around CM Punk, and we'll see what happens next week on Raw. But moving ahead in the show, let's talk about Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara defeating the Cologne brothers, or cousins, or whatever they are. Will, you're probably correct me on this.
This is why I'm here.
Exactly. I would have liked it if they could have just made up the fact that they're brothers. It'd just say, hey, these guys are brothers. What's a cousin? And it was a good match, solid match. These guys worked well together. But the story of the match is the primetime players attacked Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara, adding more heat to this tag team division that happened after the match was over. So, John, I'm going to kick it to you. What are your thoughts on the attack, the assault by the primetime players?
You know what? 6 months ago, primetime players would have been lost in the shuffle, getting bumped out of tag shot. This was a great way to keep their heat on them, give them actually even more heat. You're going to put them in a program that realistically they should go over Rey and Cara to get that heat, to probably be the guys that, however Kane and Bryan are going to fizz out, but they should be the guys to beat them. I thought it was great. It was good to see, you know, Rey and Cara take the beating, you know, after the match unexpectedly. And, you know, I don't know where I stand in this, but I actually think Big Titus wasn't bad on the stick either.
Yeah, Big Titus wasn't bad, but we all know Darren Young had two lines and he fucked them up badly. So, Will, your thoughts? Primetime players, Sin Cara, Rey Mysterio, where's it head?
Well, I thought the match, first off, was very good before even the interference. So I thought the match was good, good mixture of, you know, Lucha Libre style in the ring. And to have those guys come out and make an impact, you know, and not wrestle, but just go out there and do that attack, it was great. It showed a sign of the tag division really starting to take a turn. So I just wish he had the whistle.
You know, and you're right, Will. The tag team division is taking a turn, and I attest that to Triple H taking charge in many aspects. He's an old-school wrestling guy, and he's trying to push tag teams. He's trying to make it a little more simple. Sometimes WWE tends to overthink themselves. So if you make it simple, if you build up some tag teams and add this to the show on a weekly basis, you're going to see results. You're going to see the effect in the ratings. It's going to be better. It's going to get guys over. So I think the end game is going to be Mysterio and Cara will probably face Kane and Daniel Bryan, and that's an absolutely great match that I can't wait to see. Moving ahead, we already talked about this with Sean Williams briefly before. Eve defeated Beth Phoenix with Layla at ringside. So we're just going to skip ahead because we just talked about it. So we're going to go into Brodus Clay defeating Heath Slater, who, you know, I used to be a Slater hater, but now I'm a mark for him, man. This guy is entertaining. And Antonio Cesaro was sitting at ringside. So, Will, I'm going to kick it to you here. Your thoughts on this possible Brodus Clay versus Antonio Cesaro match that they seem to be building. It happened. They started building it on SmackDown. They have a little run-in together. And Raw, they continued it. So what do you think about this possible feud?
I like the idea that there's two fresh young guys going for a belt. And, you know, it's good to have two young guys who are new to the belt. And plus, you know, it now gives Brodus Clay his first, like, really good feud. Even though the Sandow feud could have been something and it never really went anywhere. But this one does have a potential of being a feud that you could put on pay-per-view. And it's two young guys. So, and plus Cesaro won't be able to do a lot of those moves that he does. So now it limits Cesaro on what he can do. So that's what makes this good, too, is that Cesaro's going to have to do some other things to kind of beat him.
How about you, John? What do you think about this possible feud?
Yeah, I agree with Will there. I like it. I think it's going to be, and I think one thing that it definitely does for Cesaro is Cesaro's not exactly known if you only watch Raw. I mean, yeah, granted, you know, a lot of people know who he is from ROH, but if you haven't really seen him on SmackDown, this will be a good enough feud to not only really get him introduced to the Raw audience, but it's going to really help get him over. There's no doubt in my mind he will retain versus Clay, but Clay's getting to that point now where he's a big enough name and he's over enough that, you know, yeah, granted, the standout feud fizzed out. Why, I don't know, because on the house shows, those matches were amazing from what I read. You know, Clay's a guy that will be able to get Cesaro over, and you're going to have, you know, you're going to get the eventual cat fight with Oksana and, you know, Cameron and her drinking buddy over there. But it's a good feud, and like Will said, it's going to be good to see some fresh faces going after some of the secondary titles, and, you know, maybe it actually brings some importance to the secondary titles, too. I don't think Clay should go over Cesaro. I think Cesaro should definitely, you know, by whatever means necessary, go over, and I think it will help Cesaro by being someone who's as over as Clay is.
Yeah, I agree with you guys here. Cesaro, he will win this match that will eventually be built up. I hope it happens on pay-per-view, but it'll be a huge win because Brodus Clay is pretty much unstoppable in his run here so far. Even Standout took him out a couple weeks ago and continued to attack his knee, but Brodus Clay ended up beating him at the end of that feud, or Standout ran away and got counted out. So I think this is a great match to kind of push Cesaro off the ladder. And he showed that he's not a one-trick pony. He did good on commentary, too. So I was happy to see Antonio Cesaro, who is one of my favorite wrestlers, like you mentioned, back from ROH. He's a real nice guy, too. I met him a couple times. I'm glad to see him kind of being shifted over to Raw a little bit more so more people can
see it. Should all be happy, the thing we should all be happy about with Cesaro is he got better music.
that is true. That's something that he desperately needed. Right now, moving along, and we got Dolph Ziggler defeating Santino Marella, and I feel like the Cobra is getting more involved in losses for Marella lately. Do you think this signals the end of the Cobra? Will, what do you think? The end of the Cobra for Santino?
I don't know. I don't think there's enough interest in that right now. I don't know. Like, no one's brought it up that, you know, he's losing matches because of the Cobra. It's more like Oksana was actually kind of more of a fault, or it's someone outside that's been causing it more so. I don't know what they're doing with it. It's just like a fun character. All I know is I'm about to have some popcorn, so I can't wait to have that.
Get your popcorn ready. How about you, John? What do you think about this angle with the Cobra?
Please let it lead to a Santino heel turn. And before you laugh and think I'm crazy, look at his work from back in 06 in OVW as Boris Olaykov. He is phenomenal in the ring. There was the original rumor that he was going to be brought in as Kurt Angle's protege. Of course, that never panned out because of what happened with Angle. Morella is amazing, and he can go. And, you know, it's run its course for the last, you know, three and a half years, you know, the tag team Kozlov and him being the goof. If this could somehow segue into a way to just him becoming so angry and upset, and I would even have him do what Swagger's doing right now. I would have him disappear for a little bit and have him come out in that skit that everyone thinks is going to be a comedy skit and just lay out somebody, whether it be Ryder, whether it be Hornswoggle, somebody that he can just let this guy start to go in the ring. He's phenomenal. Please let this be part of that.
It's very possible that could happen. I see the Cobra actually leaving for a while. I think you're going to have some comedy segments that might be a little stupid. We might not enjoy them as much as other people will, but you might see a feud between Santino and the Cobra, something along those lines. I'm not sure. Right now, I want to ask a question to you guys. Now, this isn't really on the card. This isn't a match on the card. But it's a question I asked on Facebook last night at facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse. This question I want to ask you two. Jerry Lawler, you know, he recovered from his heart attack, which is absolutely great news, and he seems to be okay. He's on the fast track back to the WWE. Next week, there was heavy promotion that there will be a Jerry Lawler interview on Raw. Now, John, you and I talked about this on Facebook, so I'm going to give the question to Will real quick. What do you think? Is WWE using Jerry Lawler and what took place with him, this tragic incident, for ratings, or do they legitimately think that the fans would like to hear from Jerry Lawler? Because obviously, and we as fans, we know that we'd like to hear from Jerry Lawler. We want to hear from him. We want to see how he's doing, how his progress is. But do you think WWE is doing this for ratings?
I don't think they're doing it for ratings because, people have so many different ways to get in touch with Jerry Lawler now. You've got Tout, you have YouTube, Twitter. It's not about the ratings. I think they're trying to legitimately, you know, use their social media and how important it is, because if we were going back again 2 years ago, there would be no Twitter of Jerry Lawler. There'd be no Tout. There would be no YouTube. So you really wouldn't know. and now they're kind of involved. They're really using, I think, the social media more. And I think it's a point that we do know about it, because that was a pretty scary situation where Jerry Lawler almost lost his life. And I think that if it was, if he passed, I think it'd be one thing, but he's getting well. They're kind of using it to say, you know, how Jerry's doing, you know, what's the status, you know. I think they're just, I think legitimately they're trying, they care, they actually care. So I don't think they're trying to do it for ratings. And for someone that would think that way, you know, I think it's totally wrong.
Well, I'm going to go back in time, and I remember when Brian Pillman passed away right before pay-per-view, and the next night on Raw, they had his wife.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable.
Yeah, they had Brian Pillman's widow on the air, live via satellite interviewing her, and there is no doubt in my mind that that was a ratings ploy. And during the Monday Night Wars, the business was a lot different, but that was a ratings ploy. And I don't think this necessarily is, because I really think that Jerry Lawler is so beloved that WWE feels this is the right thing to do to get him to tell the WWE Universe that watches Raw every week, because a lot of these people that watch Raw aren't involved in social media as much as you think they are. They don't read the dirt sheets in the Internet as much as you think they do. So I think it's a tactic for WWE to kind of give back to the fans and say, listen, he's all right, and we are going to, you know, show you him live via satellite. John, you had another theory last night. What are your thoughts on this topic?
I, you know, thinking back on it, I agree. I don't think Vince is heartless. I mean, despite what, you know, everyone thinks of him, I don't think it's a ratings ploy. Here's going to be the problem, though. If you don't do this thing early or even mid-show, you're going to have people that, if you do this interview at 10:45 at night, there's going to be people that are going to kill Vince and think he did it just for the ratings, even if it's just the way the show gets booked out. I think it's great. I think it's going to be interesting. You know, I wonder if we're going to hear maybe, you know, an account from Lawler as far as what he knows, what he felt, what he went through, you know, talking about what happened. But I just have a bad feeling that WWE, while they're trying to do the right thing here, there's going to be a big base of fans that are going to look at this as, this is Vince trying to put a guy who almost died 2 weeks ago on TV to try to steal fans from Monday Night Football. And I don't think Vince is going to do that. I think he's got to be careful that it may come off that way. Again, this is going to be one of those things where timing is everything. You know, I don't know if you put this on at 10:30 at night, if people aren't going to think that. You put it on at 8:30, 9:15, whatever, okay, it probably just flows with the rest of the show. Anything after 10 o'clock, you're going to have people that are going to kill Vince on it. And it's probably not right, because the one thing you can say about Vince when it comes to stuff like this, he really is a class act. I mean, the fact that his plane, you know, picked Lawler up from Montreal, took him back to Memphis, it just shows what this really meant to him, and all the reports that Vince was really disturbed about it. And apparently, you know, if he would have passed last week, they would have canceled. You know, so it's a hard WWE to be in, not because of their intent, but probably how some people, especially the anti-WWE people, are going to perceive it.
Yeah, I got to agree with both you guys on this. Let's move along, though, from this controversial topic. We got a little over 10 minutes left on the live show. We're going into the second half of Raw right now, but after the live show ends, we're going into overtime. People who are listening now are not going to be able to listen live, but it is important that you listen to the rest of the show tomorrow, the next day, whenever. Download us on iTunes. Go search us. Go to your iTunes page. Search Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. Rate us. Comment on us. Download us. Listen to the rest of the show, because we'll be talking TNA, the Bound for Glory series, Jeff Hardy winning it, and a lot more. So we're going to go into overtime, and let's continue with Raw right now. We got 10 minutes left in the live show. Wade Barrett defeats Justin Gabriel in a kind of a Nexus reunion, I guess you want to say. I mean, you heard the We Want Nexus chants in the background. And Wade Barrett, with his new gimmick, it seems to be rolling, man. It seems to be rocking and rolling through SmackDown, through Raw. So, John, what do you think about Wade Barrett? What's next for Wade?
Ziggler didn't have in the bank, I would say, put the belt on Barrett. But, you know, I actually have an idea for Barrett where I could maybe see this going, which is a little far ahead. But I think you can't put the belt on him because of Ziggler. That's fine, I get that. I would just make Barrett unstoppable. You know, if he's going to knock everyone out, take him into January, February, and you know what? We may be a year and a half late on this, but give me Taker Barrett at WrestleMania. I think Barrett, I was really thinking about today, I think Barrett's probably, with this current character and this push, Barrett may be right now the guy that can face Taker at WrestleMania, lose, and not lose anything on it, because how about this for once? When Taker's on the knee with the tongue out, have Barrett lay him out with that elbow. I mean, that elbow is vicious. I mean, it makes Chris Heroes look, you know, maybe a little soft. So I like where Barrett's headed. I think the only reason why he can't be a champion is because of Ziggler.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see Wade Barrett get pushed to that level, but it doesn't seem like it's in the plans right now. It seems like there's six guys that are going to be the main hosts of WrestleMania, and that's The Rock, CM Punk, John Cena, Triple H, Brock Lesnar, and Undertaker. So I think Barrett will just barely miss it. But, Will, what are your thoughts on Wade Barrett?
Wade Barrett. I think Wade Barrett is above doing a Justin Gabriel match. I think that he should be in the ring with someone like The Big Show or something like that, not Justin Gabriel. I think it makes him look weaker. He's not a new guy. He's already been at the top level with John Cena. He should already be up there, not facing Justin Gabriel. I think that this is the wrong direction for Wade Barrett. I wasn't impressed by it because I knew he was going to beat him. Why can't he go against somebody like a Ryback or something that would be like, yeah, that could be a challenge for Ryback or a challenge for Barrett, you know, because he's already been around the block, you know. He already proved he could be a main eventer. You should already
be up there. Who do you put over? Who do you put over, Ryback or Barrett, though?
Oh, I would absolutely. I actually wouldn't put any of them over. I would let him be like, I would let him go to draws. Let him fight outside the ring for 10 minutes, like with a 10-second count or something like that. I wouldn't even put one of them over until you kind of feel out the audience on who they are behind or who they don't like. Or I wouldn't put anybody over yet. But I don't think having them start from the ground up again is the right way to go. He's already beyond that. His popcorn is great, by the way.
I agree. They probably should have brought Barrett in as the top guy, but one of the top guys in the company. Bring him in that way and not debut him back in the mid-card, back in the lower card, and just have him steamroll these guys like it. Because it really doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? Like, he should have been put in with an established guy right away. But the match with Gabriel overall was pretty good. They got some time to really go at it. But speaking of Ryback, which just brought up, we had the debut of Will's favorite show, Miz TV. It was Miz TV's debut. The live crowd seemed to shit on it because he kept cutting off Booker T and wouldn't let Booker T get a word in until the very end. And this is something I kind of predicted a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to take any credit for it, but I did. Ryback seems to be heading towards a feud with The Miz, and I think this is perfect to get Ryback over. The Miz is irritating. The Miz is miserable. And this is the type of guy that Ryback needs to face. Will, your thoughts on the whole Miz TV and the insane feat of strength by Ryback throwing that couch over the top rope?
Well, Jay, I'm sure WWE listened to our show and absolutely took your idea. They absolutely took your idea.
No question about it. But I agree.
Yeah, it's good. So WWE can listen in and listen to my idea for Wade Barrett. But I like the segment. I like how he pulled the microphone away, didn't really get a word out, and having Ryback come out, lifting that furniture. You know, I know I want to move out soon. I will definitely have to call up Ryback Moving Services so he can move all of my furniture out of my room into my moving van and maybe even walk with it. So, because he can obviously take a couch and throw it into a room.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. John, thoughts on Ryback versus The Miz?
Well, you called...
This is going to get killed. You realize that.
You know, you called it a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, as long as Ryback doesn't walk out with the IC belt, I'm okay with it. I think it's about him trying to build them.
He's gone.
They would not put him in this feud if he wasn't. Then you got to be prepared to take the belt off him, though, at some point. That's the thing. I could see him getting Miz, crushing him, Miz getting DQ'd, counts out, whatever, and then moves on from there. I don't know if I see him getting the belt. I could see Miz getting annihilated but still holding on. I don't know if I see him getting the belt. I think this will be a good feud to get him into that next level and a way off, you know, basically beating up you, me, and Will every week on Raw. You know, so I don't know if I see him with the belt. I don't know, because then you got to – do you want his first loss to be for the IC title, or should it eventually mean something more?
Well, listen, John, the comparisons with Goldberg seem to be continuing, and he and Goldberg are having parallels here because Goldberg defeated Raven back in 1998 for the United States Championship, and he never lost it. He held it until he became WCW World Heavyweight Champion. I don't think Ryback's
going to – I don't want him.
No, I don't think it's going to take the same exact course, but maybe maybe he defends it nonstop for a fucking year. Who knows? I mean, he's been insanely good, and until the next guy comes along, which I'm going to predict is Mark Henry, I think Mark Henry versus Ryback is going to be a future feud, and might be the guy to eventually defeat Ryback.
See, that could work, though. See, I would go the opposite way with that. Like, I've been waiting for Ryback, Big Show, Ryback, Henry, like you said, even when he was a heel, Ryback, Kane, those are the feuds that you can use to get Ryback over. I don't know if putting the IC belt on him, especially with up until the last 6 months with Rhodes and Christian and Miz, it's still, there are still people that are going to look at that as that, oh yeah, it's that white belt. It's the belt that hasn't meant anything since Rocky and Triple H were feuding over it. You know, I don't know if he needs that belt for that. And of all people, Mark Henry to beat him, Who gains anything from that at this point, especially at this point of Henry's career?
Well, maybe he doesn't beat him. Maybe he just decimates him and destroys him outside the ring or attacks him, and that's the way to bring Mark Henry back, and maybe Ryback gets a big win over him. But if he becomes the Intercontinental Champion and starts defending against main guys like Big Show, Mark Henry, like you said, it'll add prestige to that belt, which it sorely needs. So right now we're going to move on. We got a little over 2 minutes left in the live show. Like I said before, make sure you download us on iTunes after the show ends. We're going to keep going into overtime. We're going to be bringing in Max Gleason to talk about TNA. But let's continue with Raw right now, guys. Daniel Bryan and Kane defeat Kofi and Truth one more time. The team friendship continues. The saga continues. Will, thoughts on this match?
I loved it. I thought it was a great match. I thought the interaction between the two was really good. You know, they definitely won, and, you know, you could tell that, you know, they did the hug it out, and, you know, this is going to continue forward. I'm looking forward to the weeks of these guys, you know, being together as a team. It's the best tag team in 5 years.
What do you think? John, go ahead. Thoughts on team friendship?
I love it. I think it's everything Will said. It's one of the, forget about just being one of the best teams in the last 5 years, it's one of the best storylines they have done in God knows how long. The only thing I would do different, and this is nothing against Kane and Bryan or nothing to do with their character, I don't know, I'm kind of on board with some of the people that are ready for the Kofi heel turn. I would have liked to have seen this maybe next week start to segue that with him in Truth, but I mean, getting back to Kane and Bryan, it's the best thing on TV, and I was texting three of my friends today. I am the tag team champion, so it's getting over.
I'm looking forward for the T-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I listened to an interview with Daniel Bryan this morning on WMMR in Philadelphia, and he was just a great interview, man. He showed all his charisma. He talked a lot about his relationship with Brie Bella off the camera, you know, and the sky's the limit for Daniel Bryan and Kane. Like we talked about before, I think it's going to eventually lead into Kane turning full-fledged heel on Daniel Bryan, and we'll get that babyface run from Bryan that we have been expecting for quite a while. I mean, he's still kind of fresh as a heel, but the guy's over. The crowd legitimately loves him, and this is the way it seems to go. I mean, Daniel Bryan's money. He's absolutely
WrestleMania.
Yeah, he'll have a huge WrestleMania this year. I predict that Daniel Bryan will be a main focus of WrestleMania. But our show is about to end. The live show is about to end. Please download us tomorrow on iTunes. Visit Facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerHouse. Join us on Twitter @TWPowerHouse. We got about a couple minutes left. for Will Vasquez and John D. This is Jay Leto. Join us next week, PWP Radio. All right, guys. We are officially in overtime right now on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. The live show has come to an end, and we still have a little bit to talk about on Monday Night Raw. Now, we brought up before Randy Orton and his shenanigans at the pay-per-view. Again, Ziggler flipping off the crowd. On Raw, he didn't seem to get punished for it. He went in there, wrestled Tensai yet again. These two seem to have a little bit of chemistry, though. I like their matches so far. They haven't been bad. But Orton's got the win over Tensai. What do you think about this, Will? What's the plan with Orton right now? He seems just kind of be lost in the shuffle.
Oh, he's definitely lost in the shuffle. I don't know what they're doing with him right now. I know he's got to do that filming, so they could take him off for a while, but right now, nothing yet. We don't know. I mean, the Ziggler thing is kind of over, so we got to wait and see what happens. I mean, maybe they still continue or not. I don't know. Maybe Wade Barrett and Orton get together. I don't know. Hard to say. All I know is that this popcorn is awesome.
I
should be here and have
right
some of this popcorn.
I could use some food right now. I'm dying. I hit the gym before the show. I haven't eaten a meal yet, and I'm dying right now. But nobody gives a shit about that.
That popcorn.
How about you, John? Your thoughts on Orton? Where's Orton going? What's the future for him right now?
Supposedly, the story with Orton is like Will said. He's going to do the movie, so they don't want to really commit to him anything, you know, serious right now. Which I was actually surprised he went over Ziggler at the pay per view. I thought for sure Ziggler would have went over. As far as, you know, the match with Tenzai, it's like, I mean, it's get Tenzai on Raw. I feel bad for the guy. I really think he's suffering the Taz syndrome from 2000, overshadowed by just the bigger, better guys coming in. But I, you know, and Orton's begging for it. It's time to turn him heel. It's time.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, you know, reports surfaced that he wanted that top heel spot that CM Punk ended up taking, but I thought that was the right move. I mean, Orton just seems to be the same old Randy Orton. He might need a complete character change. I mean, he's the type of guy over his career who has been able to transcend his character into different phases. He had the Legend Killer. He started out as the Blue Chipper, went into the Legend Killer, became the Viper and the Apex Predator. He's got all kinds of nicknames now. Maybe it's time to change his tune a little bit. He's got the movie coming, so I guess that will be, you know, where he's headed. He's probably going to be off TV for a while. Maybe they'll do an injury angle. Who knows? But I do agree that heel is in his future. So, go ahead, John. Do you have something more to say about Orton?
No, the only thing supposedly that's holding back the Orton heel turn is that they were waiting for Sheamus to really take the top face spot on SmackDown. We're about 9 months into this. If you're not sold on, you know, on Sheamus by now, you know,
what
was
this? Go ahead, Will. Shane bashes him. No, I'm just talking about your bashing him. I know you'll never consider him the face of SmackDown or the face of the World Heavyweight title or call him Triple H's boy or all those
things. I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised he survived the WrestleMania backlash. I really am. With everything that happened at WrestleMania, I really didn't think he was going to be able to survive it. I thought there was a double turn that was definitely going to happen. He survived that. So, you know, he got past that. What more does this guy need to do on SmackDown to prove that he's the top face guy? And, you know, let's get him established and let's turn Orton
around.
He's
got to be Orton. He's got to be Randy Orton.
Yeah, maybe
well, turn
Orton
heel.
Maybe Orton will be the heel that finally gives Sheamus that push he needs to take him to the next level. He just seems like the same old bullshit Sheamus. But I don't want to get into it right now because, I can talk forever about how much I hate Sheamus. But next match we have in the card, we had some shenanigans earlier on with Jarrett from Subway, which was kind of entertaining where you had Ryback.
It was funny.
More. It was funny. They implement Jarrett a lot, it seems like, over the years. And speaking of Jarrett from Subway, good for him keeping that weight off, you know. I mean, you know the Subway diet did it for him, but good for him. And we had Sandow taking on Ryder. Now, I personally, I'm not going to lie to you, I fast-forwarded this match because I kind of wanted to catch up with the live feed of Raw because I was watching on DVR. But I fast-forwarded, Sandow defeated Ryder. Hey, Will, what do you think about this match?
Did you know that slobberknocker is not a word?
Yeah, David Sandow informed us.
I didn't know that. Thanks to him, I am now more intelligent. But I thought he was great on the microphone. He started going down a bunch of words. He's like, listen, guys, you got to calm down. We have a lot more words to go over. I thought it was hilarious. Funny character. I love it. And he backs it up in the ring, too, which is great.
Yeah, he's been a good part of the show. He's been solid. Each and every week, solid outings from Sandow, especially his interaction with DX really got him over a few months ago. But, John, what's your thoughts on Sandow and Ryder? They seem to be heading in completely different directions.
Yeah, I mean, Ryder is, you know, still big enough of a name despite what you think about, you know, the character and, you know, what he does, what he's not doing. But he's still big enough of a name to still get people over. Sandow is just amazing. The character's been phenomenal ever since the first promos. And just like your boy Sheamus, Jay, he's a Triple H guy.
Well, hey, good for him. If he's a Triple H guy, I didn't hear about that personally, but if he's
supposedly Triple H is making him his new little project. So there you go. Sandow's going to probably main event WrestleMania.
Well, good for him, man.
I would give to anything to be a Triple H guy. So I don't know what you guys are complaining about.
No, I'm not complaining.
I'm not
complaining at all. Good for these guys. Good for their success being a Triple H guy, man. Like, I give Sheamus all the credit in the world for being a Triple H guy. Smart. I just don't seem to like him that much. And on that note, Sheamus and Cena, the Chief Punk and Del Rio, a lot of controversy at the end. Great match, though. Star-powered full match. And, Will, your thoughts on this ending with the foot in the rope?
Yeah, someone didn't like that. A certain person didn't like that. Was it you, Joe?
I didn't like it. I thought it was a cop-out. But it does add fuel to the fire. And between this feud with CM Punk and John Cena, there has never been a clean winner. It hasn't happened. They've fought a bunch of times on pay-per-view, and not one time has it been clean. There's always been something involved, whether it's Triple H counting the three with Cena's foot in the ropes, or if it's Money in the Bank where John Laurinaitis ran out, all kinds of distractions. You know, there's never been a clean winner, and we need this from this feud. So this just adds to that. This adds to the nonsense what's going on. Well, it's not really nonsense. This adds to what this feud, and it's probably going to end at Hell in a Cell. But what about you, John? What do you think about this ending?
I liked it. I think it plays into perfectly what they did Sunday night. Jay, you and I kind of discussed this last night. I think this needs to go to WrestleMania. I'm not sold on Cena Rock for WrestleMania. I don't think you need, especially with all the once in a lifetime billing on, especially with the fact that the DVD just came out. You could have whatever finish you want at Hell in a Cell. You can get creative with it. And then put them off. Have Heyman go like the old Jim Cornette angle with Yokozuna. You get one shot, that's it. And you can have Rocky lose to Punk at the Rumble. I've always said I think Lesnar can cost Rocky. This way you go Lesnar Rock at WrestleMania, which is where I kind of got my Barrett idea for Taker. I think this needs to happen at WrestleMania. I don't think Hell in a Cell is the pay-per-view for it, although it's probably the best match for it. You can get a screwy ending there and then have Punk go one way, have Cena go another, and then just bring it back full circle WrestleMania. It works for this feud.
I'll tell you what, John, if you want to get rid of that once-in-a-lifetime thing, all you have to do is it's simple. You have The Rock come out and say, just tell the crowd, screw once-in-a-lifetime. We're going to be twice-in-a-lifetime, and then it'll get over, and the crowd will forget that it was once-in-a-lifetime. They don't even, you know, something like that is something that WWE can just nip right away, and it would never even matter.
I agree on that, but I just think, you know, you've had this history with Punk Cena, like you said, there's never been a clean-cut winner. Why not bring that into WrestleMania?
If they do, there needs to be a break in the feud because there's no way the feud is going to continue to WrestleMania. It has to be
Let it end at Hell in a Cell. Have Heyman come out Monday night or next Monday after, since we got 6 weeks in between, and be like, you know what? I'll accept this match on behalf of my client with this condition that win, lose, draw, this is the last time they will wrestle for the title. And you can have, whether it be Big Show, whoever, someone, because I think the Heyman stable is going to grow, cost Cena at Hell in a Cell and have Punk be like, I'm done with you. Have them feud with whoever at Survivor Series. You know, if you want to put, you know, if you feel you can push Ray into it. After Sheamus loses the title, you could do punk Sheamus. You then got Rocky at the Rumble. You do whatever the Elimination Chamber, and you either have Cena win the Rumble, which would be a hell of an intrigue going into that Punk Rock title match. You have the Rumble first, have Cena win the Rumble, and be like, this is a no lose for me, because I'll either get another shot at Rocky or I'll get my shot at Punk. Like I said, you can have Lesnar, of course, Rocky to match the Rumble. Punk beats him. Punk retains whatever at Elimination Chamber, and there you go. Cena Punk for the title, WrestleMania, clean finish. The middle of the ring.
Well, that was a very good scenario. I really appreciate you bringing that up. And it's something that we'll talk about throughout the coming weeks here on PWP Radio. There are so many different ways that this can go. And it's just the beginning for these guys, you know, for Cena, for Punk. The road to WrestleMania is a long way away. So we're just going to have to see what happens. But I hate to tell you guys that we've lost Will TLD Bafita. The call has dropped out. So we're in overtime. He can't call back in. That's just how this whole radio thing works on Blog Talk Radio. So we've lost Will. So
Jay, I'll do TNA with you if you want.
Well, I was going to say, I have my friend and also a writer for the site, and I was going to ask you to stay on the line and take Will's spot. But right now, moving along, we are going to talk TNA Impact Wrestling for maybe another 20 minutes, half hour. Hell, we're in overtime. We can talk for as long as we want. But TNA Impact Wrestling had No Surrender just almost two weeks ago, a week and a half ago, and we found out that Jeff Hardy was the Bound for Glory Series winner. So right now, I'm going to bring in my good buddy, Matt Gration, who is a writer for PWP. I have two of his write-ups that I still have to publish. That's just my procrastination. I'm sorry about that, Matt, but Matt, welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, my man.
Jay, what's going on, brother? Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, you're welcome, man. And I know I haven't published your writings, and I'm sorry about that. That's me procrastinating and having a lot on my plate right now. But both of them will be up tonight, and I'll continue to publish quality content on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. But I'm just going to start out with you here, and we're going to get right into it. What are your thoughts on Jeff Hardy winning the Bound for Glory series?
Well, one adjective that came directly to my mind when I saw that was surprised. I was very surprised that they chose Jeff Hardy to be the new number one contender to take on Austin Aries at Bound for Glory. But as more days went on and things played out, as you said, I understand why they took that route going with Jeff Hardy, and I do think that he is capable of putting on a phenomenal show with Austin Aries in the ring. So, like I said, I was surprised, but he definitely deserves it. He's worked his ass off for the past year, and he really bounced back from that dark cloud he was at a year or so ago.
Yeah, you're right, Matt. It's a business decision. You put Austin Aries in there with quite possibly your most marketable guy. I mean, Jeff Hardy was the main guy on the WWE roster. He's a former champion, and he was so over that he was, you know, at the time, he was rivaling John Cena in merchandise sales and crowd pop and all that stuff. He was extremely over, especially during his run with CM Punk. But how about you, John? What do you think about Jeff Hardy? And I know the internet was kind of up in arms about it. Everybody wanted James Storm to win. Everybody
I was one of them. I think I even said it to you the first time I called in that Storm moved for the title had to be the end game. I kind of agree with Matt. I was a little surprised when I saw that Hardy had won the series, especially with Bully Ray in the finals. I thought, especially with the fact that Ray had resigned, I thought, you know, he'd be the guy to go with. But I mean, for your pure match quality, this is probably the best way you could go with Aries Hardy. I'm not so sure where this is going to go story-wise. I mean, that's the best part of the next couple of weeks on Impact, is we'll find out where it goes story-wise. But as Matt said, as far as, like, putting your main guy, your most marketable guy up there, Hardy's a no-brainer. Match-wise, with all the guys that were left, except maybe for Joe, this was also the best way to go. I still need to be sold on the story that they're going to tell leading into Bound for Glory.
This is what I think they're going to do. I think it's going to be your classic babyface versus babyface story. It might even be something along the lines of Stone Cold versus The Rock at WrestleMania 17. minus the Deborah angle that was involved with her becoming the manager, that really wasn't necessary back then, as we all know. But this could be that kind of angle, where it's based off of Jeff Hardy talking about how he needs that title. He's fought his demons. He's overcome them. And he needs to win at Bound for Glory more than anything in his life. Whereas Austin Aries is the champion, and he's been fighting hard. He's been a fighting champion. Although he's a smaller competitor, he has gotten over, and TNA was fucking brilliant to push him to this level. And I could tell you just from watching him wrestle all these years, and I actually, believe it or not, I was behind the camera one time filming an Austin Aries match on an independent show, and I got to say, he was probably the second-to-last match on the card, and it was a bunch of students that were wrestling, and you're watching these guys go, and, you know, I'm first time I've ever done camera work in my life. And it was kind of slow and it was kind of dreary. But once Austin Aries got in there, holy shit, he moved so fucking fast. You would not even believe it. I mean, on TV, doesn't even give him any credit. He moves extremely fast, and he is a workhorse of the company. He'll just keep going and going and going. And this is a match where I can't really pick a winner. I don't know where they're going to go, but it's smart that they're putting Jeff Hardy in the spotlight in a place they've never gone. It's foreign territory. It's Phoenix, Arizona. It's Bound for Glory, and it's their biggest pay-per-view of the year. So I understand it. I get it, and I like it. I think it's a smart move. Matt, any final comments on what they're doing here with Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries?
I have a little bit of a prediction. I don't see it as much as a babyface versus babyface type of a matchup. Certainly, both characters right now are babyfaces, but. I enjoyed the work that Jeff Hardy played as a heel back when he was champion with Hogan and them, and before he had his you know big meltdown. I thought he did a pretty good job as a heel, and I think that may be in store for the future as well. Again, I think they may try to tie him in with Aces and Eights somehow, or I have a feeling there's just going to be some kind of twist to this story because it's. Like you said, it's their biggest show of the year. They want to, you know, set up with a bang and, can, you know, keep the audience enthused on what's going to happen. So I expect a big storyline, you know, a big turn or something.
Yeah, Matt, I don't think that's going to happen, though. And the reason being is Jeff Hardy, when they did this Zay angle, when TNA pulled the Zay angle and they created this faction and turned Jeff Hardy heel, this would be way too similar to that. They're not going to make this mistake again because I thought it was stupid. I thought it was dumb when they did it back then because Jeff Hardy is your cash cow. He's the guy that's going to create the revenue, the advertising. He's going to get the fans behind him. He can draw in that audience. The problem is a lot of the WWE fans have no clue what happened to Jeff Hardy. That's the big problem. A lot of WWE fans have no awareness of TNA. And since they're going into Phoenix, I think it's going to be babyface versus babyface, and he's going to be more over than Austin Aries. You're going to get a lot of people in that crowd that's going to be a pro-Jeff Hardy crowd because they've never, you know, they haven't seen him in a while, and they're going to be happy to see him back in action, especially for the World Heavyweight title.
Yep. Yeah, you're definitely right. You definitely hold a valid point. I don't know.
While the new venue is a great thing for TNA, this may not be the match to have highlighted because of what you just said, that how many people, like you said, Jay, are going to go knowing who Jeff Hardy is, and how many are not going to go knowing who Austin Aries is. And that could hurt Aries, and could really hurt the way that match comes off and the way it's perceived by the live crowd there. There's no way they could have a bad match. I don't think... I'm with you, Jay. I don't see a Hardy heel turn. Also, you got to remember, Hardy's contract is coming up, so there's been no word yet, although at what we learned this week on Matt Morgan is guys signed for 2 months and not saying anything that Hardy's resigned yet, but I think the right call will be Aries needs to go over Hardy here, no matter what the scenario is. Aries has got to go over him clean, so you could really establish Aries as that face of a company in an outside market that you've never been in before and establish him. This way, the next time you come back to Phoenix, people will want to see him.
That's the only thing that can happen. I think Austin Aries has to go out on top. But if they put the belt on Jeff Hardy, it's a strictly business decision. It's to get advertisers to come in because of his name recognition. and that's all it would be. Because Austin Aries does deserve to be champion right now, and he's actually been in Phoenix before. When WWE ran WrestleMania 26 in Phoenix, Arizona, Ring of Honor went out there. They go wherever WWE goes around WrestleMania weekend, and they run shows. So he's been out there. He's worked out there. I'm not sure if that's going to have an effect on people knowing who he is. But at this show, you're damn right. Any Impact Wrestling fan who watches TNA, they will be at this show. They're going to attend this show. So I think you're going to be surprised that the crowd's backing Austin Aries. But a point you brought up, Matt, before, you've mentioned Aces and Eights. And this seems to be an angle that just keeps confusing us, man. Like, once we think it's going one way, and then it goes another way. And we think it's going that way, but then it splits again. So we got introduced to this Armbreaker character who everybody thinks is Luke Gallows, and he could be. I know he signed a contract with TNA Wrestling. But what's going on with Aces and Eights, Matt? What do you think is the end game in the future for this angle?
Man, I don't know. Week to week, I change my my views. I'm still stuck on the Bully Ray possible involvement, and I think that the Armbreaker guy is either possibly D-Von or maybe even D'Lo Brown, like that they were showing in that backstage segment that they did this past week, which I thought was a little ridiculous, but still, someone in that room is definitely a member of Aces and Eights. But I'm thinking Bully Ray. You know, that's why I think he didn't go over at No Surrender, and I think this is what they're building his character up for the big you know, mystery of Aces and Eights.
All sides do push to Bully Ray because he's the guy that pointed the finger for weeks at James Storm, and then he's the guy that came to All Saturday's aid immediately when he got hit with the slapjack. And then he's the guy that went to Jeff Hardy's aid. He's the guy that was in the finals of the Bound for Glory series with Jeff Hardy. So it seems like he's always on the outside of it looking in, and he's one of those guys that is constantly trying to figure out who it is, but he's such a diabolical, great heel that it would fit perfectly. On your thoughts on D'Lo Brown or D'Von being involved, I think D'Von could be involved. That's very possible. But D'Lo Brown does not fit the body structure of that Armbreaker guy. So I don't think he's the Armbreaker, but if he's involved in the angle, that could make sense because somebody in that room is probably involved in some way, shape, or form. Knowing TNA, it'll be fucking that shit crazy, and it'll be Brooke Hogan who's behind it all. But that's just their track record. John, what do you think? What do you think on Aces and Aces?
Okay, I'm not exactly sure, although I think we're starting to see it come together. I think I'm with you guys on Bully. I think especially now that he re-signed, I think you can push him in a big role like this. I'm still going to go with Jeff Jarrett somehow involved. I think Matt Morgan might be a guy now that he's back in the fold. And the one thing that I've said, and I know I've said this to you in the past, is how great would it be if Abyss was in Aces and Eights, but Joseph Park was on Team TNA? I think that would be just an underlining great little twist to that story. My bigger question is that how do you book this now at Bound for Glory? Because it's going to obviously be Sting. It's going to obviously probably be Hogan. And I would imagine you might have Bully. You might have some sort of like eight-man, like Team TNA, Team Aces and Eights, and that's where you'll see the turn and the reveal. But do you have Hogan and Sting somehow go over, or do you actually have Hogan and Sting and quote-unquote Team TNA minus whoever turns laid down for these guys and take this even further, maybe into lockdown? That's where I'm intrigued where it goes. And, hey, you know what? That's what makes it for good TV because it's not as predictable in black and white.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I actually think that the revelation should take place at Bound for Glory. We should find out who the leader is, who the guy behind this whole entire angle is. But I like that idea of having a Team TNA versus Team Aces and Eights somehow. Lethal Lockdown? I don't think they should do Lethal Lockdown. They should save that for the Lockdown pay-per-view. But if you did a War Games-style match without the cage, where it's, you know, you flip the coin, find out who gets the advantage, and it's just a street fight type match. But, you know, there's no pinfalls until the whole team is in there, and it would be a great way to involve, you know, I don't know what Kurt Angle and AJ Styles are going to do on the show. I guess they're going to probably go for the tag titles again. But you could really get some other guys involved in this angle. bring like the TNA babyface part of it together. I agree that Jeff Jarrett might be involved, but it's so hard to tell right now.
The reason why I lean with Jarrett is because, remember, Sting was the first guy they took out, the Impact after Sting got announced for the Hall of Fame. So I figured Jarrett's angle could be is that, you know, why are you inducting him? I'm the guy that founded this company. You know, we're going to take out your quote-unquote your heroes and your saviors. You know, I could see Jarrett coming back in that way.
Yeah, what do you think?
I agree 100%.
What do you think, Matt? You think Jeff Jarrett's a part of this?
Yeah, 100%. I definitely agree 100%. Jeff Jarrett is definitely playing a major character in this angle in some way. I don't exactly know what yet, but I agree that it is definitely going to go after Sting and, you know, that he's the first induction into the TNA, whatever, Hall of Fame or whatever, and Jarrett's pissed off about that, and I don't blame him. I think Jeff Jarrett, you know, is a great wrestler through the years, and oftentimes I felt he was overshadowed by like guys like Sting and the bigger stars, Hogan and Warrior and stuff throughout the 90s. So I think this is going to be a little bit of his revenge.
Even if Jeff Jarrett's the money behind the whole angle, even if he's just like the guy that's funding it, he's not actually behind the mask. He's not actually cutting a promo, but he could be, who knows, you know, maybe they'll bring it in where he's like banging Dixie Carter or something. You know that she's always, he really did bang her. Maybe she's the one behind it. Who knows, you know, TNA, there's so many possibilities with their booking. You just never know what the fuck they're going to do.
I think
he's going to play like an Eric Bischoff role.
Matt, you said Eric Bischoff? You think Eric Bischoff's going to be involved?
No. I think Jeff Jarrett's going to play like an Eric Bischoff role. Where like he played in the NWO, you know, where he's not in the ring, say, as much and everything, but he's definitely going to be there vocally and in the interviews, promos, week to week, just not wrestling. So
maybe he'll come back and try to take control of the company again, but that remains to be seen, I guess.
And Jarrett's a good guy to get guys like Luke Gallows and even Wes Briscoe over, because the main guys like Bully and, you know, anyone else like that who's involved can get over there on our own. But if you have a guy like Luke Gallows, who a lot of people, you know, may not know, or whatever, God knows whatever name they're going to give him, or even Wes Briscoe, Jarrett would be a great guy, great mouthpiece to get those guys over.
Yeah, he's definitely a veteran of the game, and I guess we just have to wait and see. But let's move along from Aces and Eights, and this kind of ties in a little bit because these two guys were heavily involved in the angle, and it seems to be the co-main event for Bound for Glory. That's James Storm versus Robert Roode. We had the big run-in at No Surrender for Robert Roode. He took his ball and went home, so to speak, for a little bit, came back and screwed James Storm out of his number one ranking in the Bound for Glory series. Going to lead into a match. There might be a stipulation, there might not, but this could be finally the end of this feud. It could be the final chapter, and what better place to have it than at Bound for Glory. Matt, I'm going to kick it over to you. You had this theory that maybe, I guess it was a few months ago, maybe a month ago, you had a theory that you thought Robert Roode and James Storm were in Aces and Eights together. They were going to reform Beer Money, and they were just swerving everybody. It wasn't a bad idea. I mean, just knowing TNA, you just never know what they're going to do. But what do you think about them booking this match at Bound for Glory?
Well, it's kind of depressing to me in a way. Not to take anything away from Austin Aries and his title run, and he has been a great champion. But I kind of just feel like this now is put on the back burner. You know, like this match just doesn't have the feel that it could have. You know, that with what we thought it was going to be with all the months leading up to it. But, I mean, they're going to have a great match. We know that. I don't really know who's going to win. You know, it's hard to really say with the stipulations and everything. I'm assuming, you know, they're going to have Storm go over and just for the long run of the story and to leave everyone happy. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just curious to see where they go with it. I want to see what happens this week on Impact. I was a little disappointed with last week's performance from them. You know, it kind of just came down, and Robert Roode said a few things, Storm came down, and they brawled, and that was it, pretty much. And Storm said he's going to call him out on open fight night or whatever, and that was it. I just thought we would get a little more vocal from each other, or, you know, from each guy going at each other, but I guess not. You know, just going to have to sit back and wait and see what happens.
What about you, John? What do you think?
Well, you know where I stood with this, Jay. I thought this should have been for the title at Bound for Glory. I thought it was the only way that feud could have went. Now you're probably looking at it as third from the top because of the Aces and Eights match and then Andy's Hardy. I mean, I think it may just be the case where you may just see them talk and just beat the living hell out of each other every week leading into it. You might see some kind of either I Quit or Last Man Standing match out of the two of them. I could see that being the steps that make the most sense. Knowing TNA will probably be a beer bottle on a pole match. But I'm with Matt on this. I'm really disappointed for where this should have been even 6 months ago after lockdown, you know. But, I mean, it's Storm, it's Rude, it's not going to be bad. It's going to be, a good fight, especially if, and we'll see what happens from there. I never really thought the beer money scenario, that may be a little out. You may be able to do that down the line, keep them apart from each other and then have that happen. But I can't see that happening at Bound for Glory. But, I still think it's going to be great, but I'm disappointed at where it ended up falling and all this.
Yeah, you know what? I don't feel that way, though. I feel like it is going to be the co-main event. They just started building it up. It was kind of weak last week on Impact Wrestling. It was a bit of a weak build-up to start. But I think it's going to get better. I think that they've kept these two apart for quite a while, and now bringing it back together full circle, so to speak, it's the right way to do it at Bound for Glory, but they'll always be linked. So this could be that type of feud that stays around for years, kind of like The Rock and Triple H, but on a smaller level, obviously, with TNA and all that. But both these guys are superstar talent. You know, they get their money wherever they would go. I mean, if they went to WWE tomorrow, they would be money wrestlers, no question about that. And, I'm pumped to see the match. I think it's going to be a hell of a match, and James Storm's going to go over, but they'll both do what they can to produce something that's just quality and memorable for the crowd. Matt, you just said that you're disappointed with it, but if they go out, they just go all out. They just have the greatest match they possibly can. Will that sway you away from being disappointed? Will that say, hey, they actually did the right thing by putting this on Bound for Glory and making it the co-main event?
Let me explain my disappointment. My disappointment is not with the wrestlers by any means. Whether they put on the greatest match they've ever put on or we just get, an average Storm and Rude match, which probably isn't going to happen, I'm disappointed with the way creative handled it and the way they developed the storyline. You know, I just put something that means something up for grabs, just rather than just a match. I mean, I really don't know what else they can. You know, there are no other belts or anything, but I just thought the match would have more meaning.
I agree. Fuck Brother Love, man. You can have him come out red face again. It's all he's ever been good for, that motherfucker. But anyway, I can go on about Bruce Pritchard again for hours.
Yeah,
but,
don't get me. Don't even get me started.
Yeah, I'd love to see him come out and red face, I love you, just one more time. It's not going to happen because Vince has that shit on lockdown. But
really like you.
This will be the last topic we talk about right here tonight. We're way into overtime, and I hope you're listening on iTunes or on blogtalkradio.com or even at ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. I hope you check this out on overtime tonight. And this is a final topic, and I want to talk about this because this kind of hits me a little bit close to home. He's one of my favorite wrestlers. We had his former tag team partner on the air with us last week. We had Red Titus with us live, and he talked a little bit about Kenny King. Kenny King jumped over to TNA from Ring of Honor. It was a huge, huge event that took place. You don't really see those jumps too often anymore, where it's like almost like an invasion type of deal, like when Scott Hall went from WWF to WCW. This guy went from ROH as the ROH Tag Team Champion and moved over to TNA. So Kenny King has disappeared off the face of the earth. He hasn't been on Impact. He started out strong. His initial push was good. He was involved with Aries, with Bobby Roode, and all that shit. But since he lost his Zero Eye on a pay-per-view, I don't think he's even been on the show. So I want to tie this in kind of with the X Division and how they haven't really been focusing on it too much. Zema Ayan was finally on Impact last week. I guess he defeated, I can't remember who he wrestled.
Sanjay Dutt.
You're right, yeah. He defeated Sanjay Dutt, who seems to be getting the nod over Kenny King right now. But what do you guys think? Where the fuck is Kenny King? And I'm going to kick it over to John first. Where's Kenny King, and what's going to go on with the X Division going into Bound for Glory?
Well, I guess the biggest question first about the X Division is, what's Jesse Sorensen's help? I would imagine this is going to be built around eventually Sorensen, Ion, because of the injury and the way Ion's character's playing. So I get that. As far as King goes, boy, I don't know how bad things were in Ring of Honor, but if you thought this was a better option than being the tag champ in Ring of Honor, I don't know what to really tell you there.
It was obviously a money thing. You know, in Ring of Honor, they got contracted, but it's not for a lot of money. I wouldn't assume.
I mean, I know the financial. Of course, the financial aspect is a lot, you know, better than TNA. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, this was one of the hottest, you know, even controversial moves, and he was a big figure, and I'm a little surprised, especially with the way Dixie's a little bit of an attention whore. I'm surprised she hasn't ridden him more, you know, because of all the controversy surrounding him. I'm surprised they didn't do a pre-recorded interview with him explaining, you know, why he left that other company. You know, I'm shocked. I thought King was a great addition when he popped up, and, you know, I'm a little baffled with this. You know, I mean, if Sorensen's not ready, does he job to Ion again at Bound for Glory? I mean, does that really make any sense for him? I don't know.
Well, I think Zema Ion will drop the belt at some point between now and Destination X 2013, because I remember Jesse Sorensen did say that he'll be back by then to wrestle for the X Division title at Destination X 2013. So
okay, so he's still about 8-9 months away then.
Yeah, he's not ready yet, but he'll
okay.
be back. He'll be back eventually, and I think Zema Ion won't be the guy to carry the belt at that point. But in the meantime, Kenny King is made of money, man. I've watched this guy wrestle so many times, and he is just great. I mean, he's got charisma, he's got talent, and they just haven't been using him. But even the X Division in general, they always seem to give it a back seat. And how about you, Matt? What do you think about Kenny King disappearing and pretty much the X Division just not doing anything with it? I mean, Sanjay Dutt versus Zema Ion is one thing, but you're not even having any kind of qualifying matches, contender matches. None of that shit has taken place. What do you think, Matt?
I want to see more Kenny King. You know, I never really watched Ring of Honor, as you know. I didn't really know anything about his history or his past. I knew he was a tag team champion. But when he came to TNA, you know, it was a huge deal. It was like fireworks going off in the X Division. The X Division, you know, it's saved. It's got its new leader. And then now he's just pushed to the back of the pile again. And we're still stuck on Zema Ion and Sonjay Dutt. Sonjay Dutt was, what, 2 or 3 years ago, X Division? And, I mean, it's like we're stuck on the repeat button again. Give me some Kenny King. Come on. I mean, the guy was great. He's been great in the ring every time I've seen him wrestle. He holds the crowd's attention, you know. He has great in-ring work from what I've seen. I mean, just give the X Division some life. I just feel like we're stuck on Zema Ion now, and now we're just waiting for Jesse Sorensen to come back. So I really don't know what they're going to do with the X Division from here.
I would hate to tag King this way, but this kind of reminds me of Sabu jumping to WCW in 95 and 3 months later, pretty much begging Paulie for forgiveness and showing back up in the ECW arena. I hope that's not the case for King, but I hate to say it, it's TNA, and with the way the X Division's going right now and everything's built around like 4 storylines, I wouldn't be surprised if King was back in ROH maybe by the end of the year.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I don't think ROH is going to want him back because I've been backstage at an ROH event a couple times, actually 3 to be exact. And when I was at Final Battle last year, 2011, I got to see up close and personal and I'll talk about this in detail sometime on the show, but I got to see Jim Cornette flip the fuck out over something so small and trivial, and I could just imagine how fucking pissed he was when Kenny King decided to take his ball and leave with it and go to TNA, because this guy's a hothead, man. As you've probably seen in the past, Jim Cornette is fucking nuts. So I really don't think Ring of Honor will be an option for Kenny King. You know, he tried WWE. We all know he was not tough enough. He didn't win. They decided to go with a couple of divas back then, with Linda Miles and Jackie Gato, who's now Jackie Haas, married to Charlie. But anyway, Kenny King, he's made of talent. This guy is just so charismatic, so good, and it's a goddamn shame that he isn't on Impact Wrestling right now. So we're going to give a final word. Matt, I want to hear a final word on TNA Wrestling, what's going on right now, what to look forward to this week on Impact. Matt, what do you think?
Aces and eights, man. That's what everybody wants. Come on. I want some development. Give me something, you know. Enough with the question marks already. Give me some kind of lead or something besides, you know, the internet and all that stuff that I have to read to pick up, you know, all the tips and everything. But, I don't know. I'm looking forward to the Tara Tessmacher storyline as well. I know that wasn't brought up, but Tara finally went over and made her heel turn this past week. And I think she's a great heel character, so I think these two are going to tell a great story at Battle for Glory.
Yeah, that's something we didn't bring up. It actually surprised me a little bit, but you kind of saw it coming when the segment started. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that was a giveaway.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to happen, you know, when I heard they were going to be in the ring talking at first. But once I saw it starting to develop out there, you know, you'd kind of be like, oh, shit, this is going to be a heel turn. But, John, final thoughts on TNA Impact Wrestling.
I need more storyline for Aries and Hardy. I need to know where that's going to go. And you know what? I'm going to go a little bit off the reservation here. I want to see where the tag title situation is going to go. You got a couple of good teams. You got obviously Daniel Kazarian, Chavo and Hernandez, and even Angle AJ. You know, I would have no problem with that as a three-way match at Bound for Glory. Give me some development in that. And like I said, start telling me a story about Aries and Hardy.
Well, guys, thanks a lot for joining me here on Overtime. John D. and Matt Grayson, you can find them on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. They've written a bunch of articles for me, and I really appreciate it. We're still a new site, guys. We're still a new site. We're trying to get a following. We're trying to get contributors. If you have what it takes and would like to contribute to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, feel free to contact me in any way on Facebook, on Twitter, at PWPowerhouse, or on the website. There's a contact page on the website. If you want to contribute, if you feel you have what it takes to be a writer, a podcaster, whatever else you have in mind, please contact me. I'm open to work with anybody. I'm a sharing type of guy. I like to share success with other people who are successful and vice versa. So thank you, John. Thank you, Matt, for joining me. For Will,
thank you, Jeff.
And you got it. No problem, guys. For Will,
Jay, God bless. Take care, brother.
Thanks, Matt. I do appreciate it. We'll have you next week. Please join us next week right here on PWP Radio at Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Jay Leto. Please find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse and rate us on iTunes. It's very, very, very important. The future of the show depends on it. So please get involved and do what you can. Thank you so much for listening. And we do appreciate it. This is a long show. And you have a good night. Keep it real. And please visit ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Peace.